The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition, as we do our best to answer your fairly random questions that come in, all topics regarding retirement planning. But when I say random, they're all over the board. We've got a quite good mix today. I think we have an old tax question. When I say old, we're getting caught up on some newly found or rediscovered questions that came in a couple years ago, actually. Thought we'd attack them anyway, just so we don't leave any stone unturned. But we've got some Social Security questions as well, and we usually have at least one or two IRA questions. So we got some tax, some Social Security, some IRA. And just as a reminder, before we get into answering these questions, if you want to send in your own question, best way to do that is go to the website jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And on there, there's a contact form you can fill out and submit a question, and we'll get you into the queue. There's two ways to accelerate answering your questions. First is to call during our live show, which we actually did have a caller right before this show, so I'm going to answer their question real quick. And just so he gets credit for calling in, which puts you right to the top of the line or the front of the line here. So you can call in during the show. Phone number there is 970-530-0556, 970-530-0556. And that's one way you can get to the top of the line. Second way is to actually make an appointment and hire us, but that's the more expensive way.
Or you can be from Kentucky.
Oh, that's right. I forgot we put that offer out. Yeah. You always get to put to the top of the line so we can, so Jim specifically can pick your brain about the quality of life in Kentucky for a retiree. Since that's his dream retirement location, apparently. But anyway, let me give credit. I don't know what state they were from, but they called in to ask the question, if I delay claiming my Social Security until age 70, but I pass away before that, will my wife receive the benefit of my delayed retirement credits, or will she just get my age 66 full retirement age benefit? And the simple answer to that, and the reason why we didn't make him wait on the phone here till we were broadcasting, is that yes, the survivor benefit will always be equal to whatever benefit you, when I say the survivor, so let's say you are the person who passed away in this story, if the day before you passed away, if you had filed for Social Security that day or were already claiming it, that's the benefit that the survivor is entitled to receive, the survivor and the couple. So even though a lot of people are worried about this, I've heard this question before, that as they're delaying before they actually turn on their benefits, maybe they don't make it to 70 and they die at 68 or 69, they're worried that they delayed for no reason, that their surviving spouse won't get the benefit of the delay. And that's not true. You get every bit of benefit. Even though you're not actively claiming when you pass away in this scenario, the fact that you could have been claiming and get the benefit of the delayed retirement credits, your survivor then gets those. However, it doesn't accrue beyond that. So they cannot say, well, my husband died at 69. I would like to wait another year so I get his age 70 benefit. Unfortunately, it doesn't work like that. The survivor or the spouse does not get to accrue additional delayed retirement credits. But the person who passed away, all the delayed retirement credits that they were accruing are applicable to the benefit paid to the survivor.
Perfect.
Okay.
And he called shortly after one on that, didn't he?
He called at the time we promised people to be broadcasting, but we were late. So I didn't want to make him wait on hold. So,
and this time it wasn't me.
Really?
It was you.
Pardon? It was actually me.
And Joe Madonna is...
I will say, this is the first time in memory that you were here waiting for other people to start the show.
I was waiting, and it's not very pleasant waiting.
So if you notice, every time we wait for you, we don't bring it up on the show to ridicule you, but the one time that you were here, that's somehow top of mind.
I was here early, folks, in the recording studio waiting, and neither Chris to my left and Joe to my right were here. I was all by my lonesome, waiting patiently.
How'd that feel?
It's not fun waiting.
No. Yeah.
I'll keep that in mind.
Welcome to our world.
I know. I'll keep that in mind every time I make you guys wait.
Okay. Well, that's why I delayed, because I figured, you know, he's going to be...
This is Jim. He's going to be late.
Yeah, so I actually have a question related to that. Mm-hmm. So just because I'm sort of ignorant on Social Security...
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
When do they claim that? So say he or she passes away, when does the spouse claim that benefit? Say they're not getting Social Security yet themselves. Do they claim that?
Depends on how old the survivor is.
Okay.
If they were very young, if they were below the age of 60, they can't claim the survivor yet. But the survivor benefit is available to them at age 60 or as young as age 50 if they're disabled. And then the question becomes, do they really want to claim it as early as 60, if that's how young they are? Because they will be the benefit will be reduced. So the only way you can step in and collect the survivor benefit without an early claiming reduction would be to make sure that you claim after your spouse passes, don't claim that survivor benefit until you yourself have reached your full retirement age. Hmm. Just to make it another twist, bizarre enough as it is, the full retirement age for survivor benefits can be slightly different than the full retirement age for retirement benefits. So now it's not a big difference. It's only a month or two, depending on the year you were born. Mm. But there's actually a span of years, of birth years, where your survivor benefit full retirement age is slightly different than your retirement benefit full retirement age. Don't ask me why. It's just, you know, I don't make the rules. I just try to follow them. So keep that in mind, I guess, way back in the back of your mind. But if you go into claim, I'm sure they would point, well, I'm not sure. Yeah. I would hope they would point that out to you if you were about to claim it 2 months early and permanently reduce your benefit. But if you've reached your full retirement age and your spouse passes, you can immediately, the month thereafter, be entitled to a survivor benefit and step right in and start receiving theirs. If you're claiming your own, then there's a trend, you know, you switch over to the other one. Kind of depends on what your status is. But if you're not claiming anything, you can claim. You have to have proof, of course, of their passing. Mm-hmm. Social Security does eventually get notified. But if you want to accelerate when your survivor benefit starts, you'll want to go in there proactively with documentation that they've passed away. But, yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. Okay, for those who don't recognize that other voice besides Chris's, that is Joe Madonna. She is one of our tax people, and we have some tax questions. Rather old tax questions from 2017 and 2018. So Joe did remark how the tax laws have changed since they wrote the emails. But this is all part of my effort to get through. See, this is the folder.
Very nice.
And that appeared when I got out of the hospital. It was here on the desk. And I think the few days that I was out of the office, Laura decided to clean.
Well, she started packing up your stuff to send it off.
I think she thought I was going to die.
Right.
She was just getting everything. He's not going to need any of this crap anymore.
Right.
But she found all these questions. And now I'm trying to get through them because Chris obviously forgot to do it. So since he didn't do it, I'm going to have to step up and do it. Okay, this is a question from an Idahoan, and he wrote it, well over a year ago, March of 2018. It begins, "Hello, guys, from the tiny town of Plummer, Idaho."
I've been to Plummer.
Have you?
Mm-hmm.
Are you a
Didn't spend a lot of time there, but I've been through there.
"I'm not sure you can put a star on Idaho." Oh, wow. This goes all the way back to
so
our
we haven't
star
starred.
Days. Holy moly. You weren't even here
I have
that.
No idea what you're talking about.
We used to have a map of the United States when we had the recording studio downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And we started putting stars on the map of every state we got an email question from. And we wanted to see who would be the loser state, the last state to get a star. Which one was the loser state? Do you remember?
I think it was Nebraska, but...
I think it was Nebraska as well, which we found was odd because it touches Colorado.
Yeah, but I think, I don't know, the internet, I think, just finally came to Nebraska at that year, and then it started, I don't know. It was a little odd.
So anyways, obviously he...
So we don't do the map anymore because we filled the map. We put stars on all the states.
And we even got a couple of countries. We got Singapore, Germany, Japan. It was interesting. But anyways.
Belarus,
right. River. And then it was a fan from Belarus.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted swag. So I sent them an 8x10 glossy photo of me that I signed. Mm-hmm. And I never got a thank you.
Bummer.
Mm. I know. And a chip clip that had my name on it.
Mm. Well.
But Chris says that my photo is somewhere in Belarus.
Yeah, probably be used for illicit purposes.
Either that or it's in the post office they wanted. Okay, it says, "Hello, guys, from the tiny town of Plummer, Idaho. I'm not sure you can put a star in Idaho because we actually live in Washington."
Oh.
Well, then where the hell are you from?
He's working in Idaho.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
He's emailing
However,
you from
they're really
we
close,
work in
Washington.
Idaho.
There you go.
Idaho.
I wonder why he welcomed us from Plummer.
Because he's there when he wrote the email.
Oh. Okay.
Just keep reading.
He's All using right. his work email.
You let me. Now I can't talk and read at the same time. Hold
Maybe
on.
He transcribed it to someone.
"However, we both work in Idaho. We have a rental house in Idaho, and I am emailing you from the school I work from in Idaho."
That's your answer, so you just had to read a little farther.
But he lives in Washington. Uh-huh. Okay, here are our facts. I'm married for 12 years and 62. My wife will be 62 in a couple weeks. So, like, they're pushing mid-60s by
right.
now. Okay. Our AGI is about 140. We have two rental homes. First one is paid off and is in Washington. Second one is in Idaho. Can you pronounce it correctly? Coeur d'Alene.
Coeur d'Alene.
Coeur d'Alene.
Pretty close.
I nailed it.
He was hoping you'd butcher it. Like, he's clearly a longtime listener because he knows your pronunciation problems.
I got it.
Mm-hmm.
Our Coeur d'Alene house.
Not much changes.
Mm-hmm. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's amazingly close.
Thank you.
It's a little stuttering. I mean, a little jagged.
I got it, though. Yeah. Can we keep moving?
Yeah, go ahead.
Our house in Idaho
is
worth about $250,000 and we owe $38,000 on it.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of detail.
Mm-hmm.
The home we currently live in is worth $360,000 and we owe $230,000.
Mm-hmm.
We would like to purchase a new home in Washington State for $350,000 that eventually we will live in. But right now we're in no hurry. I guess no hurry to live in it. We would also like to sell the Idaho home to help offset the cost of the new home. We are thinking that when we find the dream home in Washington, we would immediately list the Idaho rental and sell it soon after. We would then rent out the newly purchased Washington home for 3 years and submit a 1031 exchange on the Idaho home to avoid cap gains from the sale. Mm-hmm. After 3 years, we would then sell or rent the home we currently live in and move into our dream home. I understand there are a lot of moving parts here, but I wonder if this is a possible strategy, or are there other options? I think I see what
so
he's trying to do.
What's the strategy other than delaying the recognition?
Well,
of
what
the
he's trying
gains?
To do in my eyes, and I don't know, and you're the tax person, but he's trying to you can't 1031 into a personal residence.
No.
So he's trying to say, hey, I'm going to sell my Idahoan home. I'm going to 1031 it into this new Washington
and then
home.
And wait 3 years.
Rent
and
it
convert
for 3 years.
It to his personal
and
residence.
Then convert it to his personal. Do you have to recapture that?
Okay. So first of all, he broke the first rule, which is indicating that he wanted to make the 1031 exchange a primary residence. So if he wants to 1031 exchange,
that's also step doctrine.
That's
I
the
bet.
First. That's the first rule, is that you cannot intend to turn it into a personal residence. If you make any kind of indication that you wanted to do that,
like on a public broadcast,
like right here, you've broken the rule. So if the IRS goes back, you know, he's obviously saying, oh,
well,
yeah,
the IRS listens to our podcast.
I know
all the
we
time,
have to be very careful about those things.
Well, we protected his anonymity.
Excellent.
And we call him George.
You described all kinds of things about him.
I'm sure
he's
there's
a school,
lot of people in Idaho
in
who
plumber.
Fit that bill. Oh, never mind. The IRS isn't going to go after him. Go
so
ahead,
needless
talking.
To say, you have to have actual intent. If you are 1031 exchanging any mm-hmm. property, your intent to that property has to be investment or business.
Right.
It cannot be because he's not the first person who's thought of this.
Right.
And it is a strategy that people have used in order to avoid paying cap mm-hmm. gains on things. So he has to have that intent. Now, there's a way to avoid that. There's actually a safe harbor method that you can claim on a 1031 exchange that says, I'm not going to move into this property. It's a personal residence, or it's a rental property. And you can claim that safe harbor method. They've made, you know, some things that can help you. But in his case, he actually would be able to do this, because the rules are, as long as you have the property 2 years mm-hmm. and you use it less than 10% of the time personally,
right,
you can move into it and have the primary home exclusion.
And the carried over cap
disappears.
Gain,
it disappears because you become part of the primary home exclusion for both properties. The thing is he does mention renting out his primary residence that he's moving from into the new one. And the same thing would go for that property. If he still wants the home exclusion, if he's going to sell it after, he says, 3 years, they would maybe rent out their primary residence that they moved from. If he is going to rent that out, he has to make sure and do it in less than 2 years, because if he doesn't, then he doesn't get that
personal
primary home
right. So
exclusion.
He'll have to sell it within the 2 year period.
Right,
so it's
exactly.
still considered a personal residence.
Yes. He does get the exclusion there. Mm-hmm. The only thing that's different in that circumstance is that he has to follow the recapture rules, which, so he would take depreciation on those 2 years that he rented it out to whoever, and he would reclaim that depreciation on his tax return. But he doesn't have to pay the capital gains on it. All mm-hmm. he has to do is recapture
the depreciation. Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. It does.
So him announcing ahead of time
was not a good idea.
But as long as he makes it past that 2 year period, if you happen to have a rental that you had 1031 exchanged into, and later on decide, maybe due to a hardship of some sort, mm-hmm. that you want to move into it as your personal residence, you can do that and get the personal residency
home exclusion
mm-hmm. as long as it's been more than the 2 year
I
period.
Always yeah. thought, and I remember when Junior was here, otherwise known as Justin, mm-hmm. and actually by the time that guy wrote that email years ago,
Justin should have answered. Yeah.
We were researching some of this, Joe, because we found when you're converting a lack of a better term, commercial used property into a personal residence, there were a bunch of rules you had to follow. At least I thought they were. I'm not a tax expert. I don't pretend to be one.
there are rules to follow. If you're doing 1031 exchange or 121 exclusion.
This was for the exclusion.
There's lots of rules to follow. And this is one. This is it. I'm saying that in order to get this, you have to follow the two of 5 year rule and less than 10% personal use. And you can't have intent to make it your personal. That's really the rule. And they can look back on that. And they're really the final judge of whether or not they believe you or not. So there's ways to prove it. It's not like they're, you know, going out and attacking all the people that do this. But if they find that they think that you did this intentionally, then they won't allow it. So you just have to be careful about following the rule. And like you said, maybe something changed in life and, you know, they had to move into
that
property.
Well, worst case scenario, let's say you did that. You normally wouldn't be recognizing the cap gain until you sold that property. If that was the dream home they're going to stay into until death, worst case scenario, what is worst case scenario?
No, but they avoided the cap gains on the sale.
I know, but what I'm saying
is
but they moved into the next one. And the only time the cap gain would be recognized on that second property is when they sell that second property. Mm-hmm. But if they never intend to sell it in their lifetime, who cares?
Yeah, they could just keep it and whoever inherits it, great, or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
And just because it was 1031 exchanged into, step up.
Right.
Right? So if that's their final home, they don't have to worry about these rules. Who cares?
Okay.
If they're going to eventually sell it to do something with those proceeds, that's when this question is going to come up.
Yeah.
Whether they get the home exclusion or they're going to get the cap gain on there. But
well, and hopefully all your listeners understand that capital gains only applies to the gain portion. It's not like, you know, you have to keep track of your mm-hmm. basis. If they only purchased the property for $100,000 and they got $200,000, they're only paying $100,000. They're not paying the complete gains tax on everything. Right. So who knows the circumstances and what the appreciation is there. They could pay also zero, possibly, you know, depending on what tax bracket they were in or what income. Mm-hmm. So it just depends.
Yeah.
But
so they might be worried about nothing that important.
Okay. I'm going to, when I have nothing to do, which is most nights, start looking again. I remember when we were looking, when Justin and I were looking, we were doing some research for some situations. That there was a little bit more involved, I thought, that the IRS was on to this of trying to take a home that you once rented and then just go live in it for 2 years, sell it, no capital gains, and move into another home, live in it for 2 years, sell it, no capital gains. And I thought there was some rules around that.
There are lots of rules surrounding
around that.
I'm not going to go into detail about all the specific things that you have to follow because people would get very bored with that. So when you go home tonight, you can get bored with it.
Our listeners don't get bored. They're do-it-yourselfers. They eat this stuff up.
Hmm.
Okay, so you're saying the guy can do it, even though not the way he did do it by announcing that he is going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's probably, that's good. I'm thinking, Chris, that's the step doctrine rule almost here, where he's trying to avoid... He's trying to do a series of steps to get to a tax-free sale of a rental home.
But if he never sells it, there's never any issue. That was my point.
But there is kind of an issue. That's the point I'm trying to make, unless mm-hmm. I'm totally missing the boat here. When he sells the Idaho home,
mm-hmm.
the Idaho rental, which is a commercial home, let's just mm-hmm. say he made $200,000 on the sale.
Right.
That $200,000 is not being taxed. Because he's going to put it in another home.
Correct. But even if he left it in that Idaho home and moved into it, he'd have the same exact issue. The fact that he's moving it to a new house doesn't change the story.
Okay.
The 1031 just allows you to move that embedded unrealized cap gain to a new property. That's all the 1031 lets you do. Then whether he moved into the Idaho home or moved into this new dream home in Washington that they transferred the unrealized capital gain to, his ability to move into it later, turn it into his personal residence, still exists. You just have to follow the rules. Once he then sells it, moving in doesn't trigger a tax event. It's once he then sells it, how is it going to be handled? Is he meeting the rules so that he can get the home exclusion, personal home exclusion, or is it going to be the capital gains is going to have to be recognized because he didn't follow all the rules? That's
right. And if he moved in 5 months after he 1031 exchanged it, he's going fail
right, exactly.
one of those rules. Or if he uses it more than 10% of the time, like say he's using it more for vacationing and spending a lot of time there personally, more than 10% of the time, then all of a sudden, nope, can't have it.
Yep.
Okay, that makes sense. There's another tax question, but we also have this question that kind of tied into something you just said. So before I get to the old tax question, I'm going to get into a newer question on step up in basis. This is from, well, I don't know who the hell it's from. Well, I know they signed their name Georgette, so that's either their real or fake name. I don't know. But they don't give the state. Anyways, it begins. Thank you for all the information you provide and entertainment. That must be my part. I'm the information, the entertainment.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
I just read an article that stated cost basis of a taxable asset will be stepped up upon the death of the first spouse. Is this true? Mm. I don't ever recall seeing this before.
Community property state.
Well, she's definitely calling from a community, emailing from a community property state, I thought, because it said totally stepped up at the death of the first spouse. Before we get into community property, why don't you just talk a little bit, Joe, about what step up in basis is?
Well, you have a cost basis when you have that asset, whether you purchased it or you inherited it, you have that basis. If someone passes away and it becomes yours, you have this basis that you inherit that day, the fair market value of that asset. So you don't actually get the basis that they purchased it for or they inherited it for. Rather, you get the basis on the day that you inherited or were given the property from the death of that person. That's called the step up in basis. So, for example, if you were to get a home in a situation where maybe a parent or both parents were deceased, so you inherit that home, you don't get the basis of that home when your parents purchased it. You get the basis that was on the day of the death of those.
So which effectively completely shields a certain amount of capital gain in these assets from ever being taxed. That's the gloriousness of the step up in basis. Maybe they bought the house years ago for $10,000.
Right.
It increased to $100,000 during their life. They passed away. The kids receive it. They don't have to, they're not taxed on the gain all the way back to the $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
It's that's that new stepped up basis at the death. So that's what the step up is.
Right. Put another way is, let's say you bought something for $50,000, listener, and it grew to $100,000 and you sold it. You're still alive. You sold it. You have to pay taxes on the $50,000 gain. In this case, we're talking capital gain. So you would have to pay cap gains on $50,000. Now, how much you have to pay is going to depend on your marital status, how much income you've earned that year, and a few other things. So I can't say you're going to pay a lot of taxes or a little taxes. Cap gains taxes are a little different. But that's how it works. But following that same logic, you put $50,000 into something, it grew to $100,000, but you didn't sell it. Instead, you died. And then you left it to one of your children, let's say your daughter. You left it to your daughter. So now she has inherited a $100,000 asset. The $50,000 you put in and the $50,000 of growth. And now she sells it. For $100,000, the exact value it was on the day you died, there would be no taxes owed. Even though if you would have sold it the day before you died for $100,000, you would have had to have paid taxes on $50,000. The day after you die, your daughter sells it, or a year after, doesn't really matter, and she sold it for the same $100,000 in my example, it's tax-free, because the IRS will wipe out any embedded gain in the asset at your passing. Now, this does not apply to any type of what the industry calls qualified account. That would be an account that, quote-unquote, qualifies for special tax treatment. IRAs, 401Ks, 403Bs, annuities, even though they're not technically a qualified account under ERISA standards, and neither is an IRA. But they all get this same treatment, special tax treatment. The IRS calls those assets IRD, income with respect to a decedent. In other words, they look at those assets as income, not an investment, income. Even if you had your IRA at Vanguard and you put $50,000 in some Vanguard fund and died when it was worth $100,000 and your daughter inherits your IRA, she will pay taxes on the entire IRA balance if it was a traditional IRA with no basis in it. So it's important to understand, listener, not all assets enjoy this step up in basis. Now let's go back to your original question. You said at the death of the first spouse, the value of the asset steps up. How did you word it? You said, I just read an article that stated the cost basis of a taxable asset is stepped up upon the death of the first spouse. Is this true? It may not, at the death of the first spouse, fully step up. It's going to depend on the state you live in. There are, what, 7 community property states?
I think seven.
For some reason, it's the number handful. 7 is in my head. Too bad there wasn't something called like Google or something like that that you could type
would
in.
Would you
how
like
many
me
community
to look it up?
I'm just saying, if they could invent something that would allow you to type a question into it and the answer appears, maybe they would call it Google to like reference the biggest number in the world of potential answers.
Kind
of
like, why are my tomatoes splitting?
Yes.
8.
There's 8?
8.
Arizona, California, Texas, Washington, Idaho. Oh, 9. Sorry. Louisiana, Arizona, California, Texas, Washington, Idaho, Nevada, New Mexico, and Wisconsin. 9.
Okay, 9. So I saw 7 in my head, but that's because I didn't see the little loop on the 9.
Well, that's more than I thought.
So you need glasses for your dreams?
Exactly. So what happens in community property states, listener, is yes, at the death of the first spouse, the entire property's value will be stepped up 100%.
If the property is considered community property. It is possible to have non-community property in a community property state.
Absolutely.
So just to be very clear,
I
want
like
to make sure.
I like that depth. Mm-hmm. So Chris is correct that in a community property state, you could file to have it non-community property. Then it wouldn't enjoy a double step up in basis. But the whole reason you should move to a community property state is to get a double step up in basis. But anyways, at the death of the first spouse, in my example, you guys put $50,000 in something. It grew to $100,000. And now one of you died. Not both, but one of you died. The new basis for the surviving spouse is $100,000. And then that spouse lets it grow to $200,000. And then that spouse dies. And a child or a favorite financial planner from a podcast, whoever, inherits that $200,000. There would be a second full step up in basis at the death of that second spouse. But in a non-community property state, it gets a little tricky. It's going to depend if it's held joint tenants with rights of survivorship or tenants in common. I don't want to get into all this mess. Let's just assume it's joint tenants. If Pete was here, he would say it gets a 50% step up in basis. But Pete would also say, unless you can prove the deceased spouse fully owned, put all the money in. It wasn't truly joint. He claims, and he's not here. Do you know about that, Pat? No?
No, but I see where you're going with it.
Yeah, Pete's always explained to me. We're going to have to get him on. You know, I dragged his little hiney out of retirement the other day and took him out to lunch. Picked his
Isn't
brain
that
on a bunch of stuff.
What you do in retirement is go out to lunch?
You know, he's still not retired yet. He's trying.
He's never going to.
I don't think he is. I think it's at this point, he blames it on, he keeps pointing to his office, which is right next door to Austin's. And he keeps pointing to the office going, oh, they won't let me leave. Oh, they won't let me leave. But he did say, they took me out of my really nice office with all the windows and they gave it to his replacement. And he's kind of in the back now. And I'm thinking, maybe they're trying to tell you to get the hell out. But anyways, Pete, for those who don't know, is our resident estate planning attorney who also has a JD in taxation. And he said if the if you can show that the deceased spouse put in 90, 80, 90, 100% of the value of that asset, it'll step up that much. But if it's just owned a husband and wife and they didn't really track anything,
yeah.
And it all commingled in there and no one's tracking, it's a 50% step up in basis at the death of the first spouse and then a 100% step up in basis at the death of the second spouse. Hmm. At least that's how I understand it. I could be
it's
wrong.
It's been so long
that.
Since we've had him on talking. I remember having that conversation, and I don't remember the details about that.
We're going to have to get him back on that. And if anyone's listening and knows better, like, hey, Jim, you totally misunderstood Chris. It doesn't work that way. Not Chris.
Pete,
thank you. You totally misunderstood Pete. It doesn't work that way. But I'll try to get Pete to come back on. We have a couple of estate planning questions anyways I want him to do. And since he's in a smaller office, we'll make fun of him and get him on the podcast. But that was my understanding is if you can prove the basis contribution from the decedent, you can get that.
You can get more than 50.
Okay, so you can. So my memory is correct.
No, I'm not saying you can, but that's the argument is that if you could prove very clearly that there was a preponderance of contribution from one of the two, even though it's held joint tenants, you get more than the 50 that you get by default.
Mm-hmm. Correct. And yeah. That's what I always thought. For tenants in common, listeners, in case you're wondering on that, that's when you own a certain percentage of an asset. It's not owned joint tenants with rights of survivorship where all these joint owners are sharing into it and they're just splitting everything. You could have four owners of a property, and they could all own 25% exactly, or one could own 70, and the other three could own 10 each. At their death, at their respective death, the step-up is equal to their ownership percentage, and it would be split or not even split amongst the other tenants in common. It would go to whoever that decedent left it to. It doesn't automatically go to the other owners. It would go to their estate and pass by how their will or deed has it set up. Did I miss anything on that, you think, Joe?
No.
Okay. So that is my understanding of tenants in common. What do you think on that, Pete? If he was here, that's what I would have said. Mm-hmm. But instead, I'm going to say
Chris. I was reading
Chris.
About this other thing.
Oh, okay. So you weren't paying attention to me?
Nope.
Okay. Then we won't need your answer. But anyways, listener, yes, you heard correctly. There is a thing called step up in basis, but not necessarily a full step up at the death of the first spouse unless you live in a community property state and it's held as community property. Then you will get two full step ups in basis at the death of each spouse. But in a non-community property state, it's generally, if it's held jointly with just two people, a husband and wife, it's generally a 50% step up unless you can prove the decedent contributed significantly more than half the basis. All right. Anything else? Do you want to add? Because you're diligently reading this thing called Google.
No, there was a whole big legal abstract on several items regarding this that I stalled about halfway through. So,
anything you want to share with our listeners that is of importance?
Just in general in life or?
No, about this talk.
Oh, no.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying you were there.
You left it kind of wide open.
You did that before as well.
Yeah, when you asked me about my split tomatoes. Mm-hmm. Anything you want to talk about? And I says, yeah, why am I tomato splitting? And then he got all hissy. Did you hear him?
He did.
He's like, oh my God, I can't believe you're asking that.
So now you have your opportunity.
I don't think I said it like that.
I think you did. And I got some very good advice from our listeners. One gentleman
Clearly.
From Colorado, yeah, mailed
Somebody
me a whole
mailed
article.
You a whole, like yes. a physical article.
And mm-hmm. yes, it's...
No, I get it.
Although I will say I'm starting to get tomato end rot on a group of tomatoes that I did not put calcium in the soil on. I forgot to... I always put calcium in my soil
the
out
The black
here.
On the bottom?
Yep.
Yeah.
And
lime. Lime will cure that.
It's calcium.
Yeah.
So I usually put chelated... calcium or whatever they call it, the little granule stuff. And I didn't put it.
Oh,
in
you
this.
Don't just cut them in half and squeeze it?
Calcium?
No, lime.
Oh, no. I don't just squeeze limes with a little bit of margarita, some salt. No. So anyways, yeah, some of my tomatoes are getting that. So calcium really works, because the calcium treated tomatoes, no bottom end rot. Mm-hmm. The non-calcium treated tomatoes this year,
yep,
bottom end rot.
Yep.
I don't know why I tried gardening. Okay, let's get to another tax question. This one is going even way back in the time, way back in time. What did they call it on that Peabody show, you know, with the talking dog?
In the Wayback Machine?
Wayback Machine. So I was right. This is going way back in the Wayback Machine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't realize you were referencing that 70s cartoon, but yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Peabody.
I get it.
And what was his kid's name? Like Mr. Peabody owned the kid. The kid didn't own him.
No, I know. The kid was the pet.
What was his name? Do you know? Do you even know what we're talking about?
I have no idea.
She has no clue what we're talking about.
I'll have it for you a moment. It's right on the tip of my tongue.
This makes me feel old.
Oh, you should feel old.
I should feel old next
to
her.
No, come on. See, I've been trying to convince him not to feel old, and here you are. You should feel old.
Why are you
old.
Trying to convince him of that?
Well,
because she's nice, unlike you.
No, because if he's old, then, you know, the rest of us aren't far behind.
Oh, here I am.
Sherman.
Sherman. That's it. Sherman.
Sherman.
Here I am thinking you were giving me a compliment today, and you were just trying to make yourself feel good.
Yes, I'm just making myself feel better. I'm just telling you.
Yeah, Mr. Peabody and Sherman.
You never heard of Peabody and Sherman?
No.
Well, they even made an updated movie about it.
Oh,
it's
well,
like your generation.
I'm not really into TV and anything. Yeah.
And anything?
And anything to do with TV. Okay. I don't like TV. I don't watch a whole lot of TV.
What about your kids?
They don't watch a whole lot of TV either.
That's depressing.
Do you own a TV?
Yeah, I do have a TV.
Oh, okay.
How do you watch football?
I do watch football, but
okay.
I don't watch like
shows. Well, that's the TV's highest purpose there.
Excellent, yes.
Have you been watching the New England Patriots?
Yeah, I did watch them.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm.
And I do like the New England Patriots.
Why, thank you.
Yeah.
She gets in a raise. You see that?
Yes.
Unlike some people. Okay, so here's another tax question. Jim, Chris, and Justin. So this is going way back in
AKA
time.
A.K.A. Joe now, right?
Yeah. I love the show and all your great insights, especially from Jim.
It didn't say that.
It did too.
No, it didn't.
You read this, did it not say that?
I don't remember.
I love the show.
I can always tell when he adds his own. He acts like he can just sneak it in there without anybody noticing.
I love the show and all of your great insights. I had to look up the word opine, but I have started to use it in my vocabulary.
As frequently as you do?
I do say that word a lot.
Yeah.
I handed you these.
Yes, you did. I
walked into her office today and I says, hey, look through these emails. Tell me if you can come up and opine on them.
Did you have to look that up?
Look up opine?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Okay, good.
She's been here long enough to know what it means. My background. The last time my wife and I sold our house, we took all the proceeds, $127,000, and put it in a brokerage account rather than paying down our new mortgage. Our new mortgage was $379,000. I used a VA loan, so I avoided having a down payment and PMI insurance.
Sneaky.
Yeah. In this account, I also, I guess the account that he put the $127,000 in, mm-hmm. in this account, I also have some stock from an employee separation bonus. The stock is worth $40,000. So I have about $212,000 in this account. With a cost basis of 127. Okay, that all makes sense. I get all that. I'm anticipating in several years, 5 to 8, which by time I'm reading this email, it's now 3 to 6, that the brokerage account, excuse me, the brokerage account will have grown enough. Plus, the mortgage I am paying every month will be down to a point where I should be able to pay the house off in full. I see what he's doing. Okay. Mm-hmm. However, I am concerned about the taxes that I will owe. I'm assuming I will have to pay 15% cap gains on the taxable amount. I'm in the 24% tax bracket, which now is what, 22?
There is a 24 as well.
But if this was written...
So. I guess, yeah, I mean, it'd be 22.
Yeah.
If
he he's in the 22 now as we speak.
Right. Because of the Trump tax cuts.
Mm-hmm.
The date, what is the date on that one?
February 23rd, 2018. Actually,
okay,
no, it could
so
be 24.
Okay, so he could be 24.
Could be 24. Okay. What is the best strategy to minimize the tax impact I will have when I try to pay off my house? If this is a factor, we plan on moving to another state and buying another home 7 years later. I don't know of any way to avoid the taxes on the cap gains short of
evasion.
Yeah, which we would not recommend.
No,
so.
But no.
Well, you wouldn't recommend.
The point was, yeah, that's...
I mean, you can take large charitable deduction, but that's not going to help you. I would take advantage of the Trump tax cuts. Could he not, though? If he had... or could get himself into the 15% tax bracket, would the cap gains now be technically zero? I know it's not quite that way, but could he artificially 1 year?
Yeah. How old is he?
So, I don't think it's...
He doesn't say. He never says.
He doesn't say if he's still working either.
Right, no. So it's all about the income amounts
now.
Yeah,
the timing might be the issue. Right. If he could delay this whole transaction till after he retires and do it the year after he retires, he would get favorable capital gains. He won't exclude the gain, but the gain will be affected by lower taxes than if he did it while he was working. That might be...
But how would that work? I always get confused on the actual taxation. Justin, when he was here, John... Joe.
Thanks.
Who the hell is John?
I don't know. It starts with a J. We're throwing all the J names out. Justin, John, Joe.
That's what was screwing me up. It's all Joe names. J names.
Mm-hmm.
Where was I going with this?
You were
going
to ask about the capital gains.
Talk about some
genius
thing that Justin
works,
said.
And then
right.
Stacking.
When Justin and I were going through this, and I know you've written articles for us on this, and I think did a whole podcast on this one day when I wasn't in. But if he did sell... the gain, he has a basis of $127,000, he said. It's worth $212,000. Let's just say he sells it for $227,000, just to have round numbers here. He has $100,000 a gain, but he sells it in a period of his life where his income puts him in the 15%, well, now it's 12% bracket, but either the 12 or 15 after 2026. That low bracket where cap gains are quote-unquote zero. Justin always told me, even though the cap gains is zero, it doesn't really work that way because those untaxed cap gains, he said, are filling your lower brackets, causing your income to be subject to higher brackets.
Yeah.
So he said the cap gain might not be taxed, but your income taxes might be a little higher. Do I have that understanding
you do.
Correct? Okay.
You do. Yeah.
So could it be, though, to a point where the $100,000 won't be subject to the cap gains tax rates, which would be the 15 or 20%, but his income, which let's just say to be in the 12% bracket as a married person, is coming in at, say, $80,000. So with the standard deduction, he's well within the 12% bracket. That $80,000 might be subject to slightly higher income taxes?
Ordinary income tax rate, yes.
But the $100,000 won't be subject to tax income tax, capital gains taxes?
No, it's actually all to do with the amounts. So if you have a taxable income of married filing joint, I think it's $78,750, if you go above that income amount, then all of your cap gains is going to start bumping up into the capital gains rates. So,
right, but if he made $80,000 and then took the standard deduction,
oh, then he'd be below.
That's
yes.
what I'm saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why I capped it at $80,000. That's then he takes the standard deduction that pushes him down to $56,000 of income,
right.
Well below the $78,000-ish or so thousand. So that will allow the whole $100,000, if I understand this correctly, am I wrong?
Well, the $100,000 is still going to be counted as income. So you can't, it's not two separate incomes.
Okay, so
They're together.
So that $100,000 will push him above.
It will
above.
Push, yes. I call it the bump zone. So it keeps continuing your income up and up and up. So even though he doesn't exceed with other sources of income, that $78,750, he still exceeds it with his other sources, the
with
cap gain.
$100,000 cap gain,
right.
He's
so
really
all of it integrates
it.
Together. Yes. It's going to keep pushing your ordinary income up.
But
it's still counted together.
What I'm
together.
Getting at then, Joe, and here's where I'm confused, mm-hmm. and I'm sure our listeners are too, because I'm not explaining this well, and I'm learning on today's show as well. So let's just assume, Joe and Chris, him and his wife make $80,000 in the year he wants to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just assume he does it and the Trump tax cuts are still in effect. He gets a $24,000 exemption. So that makes, just assume nothing else, no other exemptions, no money going into 401ks or deductible IRAs. So he's at $56,000 of taxable income. That's below the cap gain structure.
Mm-hmm.
So at least right now on paper, his cap gains are zero. But now he sells the home and he has a $100,000 cap gain. So does he have to say, and I don't know if this is the way you do it, does he now say, oh, I've got $180,000 of income. I have a $24,000 exemption. So I'm going to declare $156,000 of income. That puts me way above the cap gain, and now I have to pay cap gains.
Right. So on that 100, you said 100,000 mm-hmm. of gain, you subtract out the 78,750 because all that is going to be in 0%. And then everything above that is going to be at 15%.
So it would, let's just call it, so what is that, Mr. Math Major, 78,750 minus 100,000?
21,250.
Okay. So about 21,000 would be subject to capital gains.
In the 15, yeah. But the rest of it's going to be at zero.
The rest of it gets
below
zero.
That 78,750.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
That part makes sense. Okay. That's where I was missing it.
Okay.
So if you do...
What about that other 56? Where does that fall?
What was the 56?
The income they had
income.
After
it's
the...
It's ordinary income. It's not sub... Like, it's two different tax systems almost. So that,
right.
Yeah.
No,
so
I get
he's
it,
just going to be taxed at ordinary income tax rate. So whatever his taxable income amount is, that 56,000 plus 100, whatever, that's going to put him in a tax bracket and that income is going to be taxed at an ordinary rate.
The 56.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. So everybody kind of gets the 78.
But where did what Jim's getting into, and I see where you're going because we had this discussion with Justin before,
yeah.
is the stacking.
Stacking,
essentially
exactly.
the stacking.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you're describing it, though, there's not a stack. The 100,000, you subtract the 78 and the excess over there. But the 56 isn't contributing to and eating up some of that 78 in your story, Joe. Or does it? Does that 56...
It does. It does
okay,
eat it
okay, so it
yes.
isn't just the 21 that's going to be subject to 15. The 56 is going to be
gonna
there.
It's going to push it.
Then the 100 is going to stack. So the between 56 and 78, so 22 grand is still at zero.
Zero.
But everything over that, so about 78,000 of that gain is going to be taxed at 15.
Yes. Thank you for catching that. Yes.
So that there is a stacking element going on here. So even though with that other income, you don't get the whole... It's not like... here's an analogy. I think that will clear it up for people. Let's say you have the 56,000 of taxable income, so you're in the bracket that they advertise zero capital gains if
mm-hmm.
you're in that bracket.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, oh, this is an opportunity of a lifetime. I'm going to sell my $50 million portfolio that has capital gains in it, and it'll all be tax-free.
Right.
Obviously, that's not going to work.
Think
no. Right.
Works.
No, that's not how
no.
that's not going to work
no.
that way. It's going to shield just that little bit that's left
yeah.
in that bracket.
Right.
But everything over that then is going to open it up to cap gain. So it's not like it's a free pass where if you're in this bracket, you redeem your golden ticket and say, I can now take all the gains in my life, unlimited amount at mm-hmm. 0%. It doesn't work that way. It's got this, they apply to each other and they relate to each other. Even though their income tax rates are separate from cap gains rates, there's this integration piece.
Yeah, the capital gains are always going
to
stack on top of your
right.
ordinary income and it's going to move up
right.
together.
Right. So that's how they determine how much of the gain is going to be zero versus 15 or
how did you come
more.
Up with the 78,750 or whatever
they,
it is you
they
said?
They did.
That's
well,
the
and that's for married filing.
Bracket.
Yeah, and that's for married filing joint. It's 39 something for single. So if you're single, it's different.
And that, how would you describe that for married couples, that 78,750? What is that called?
The IRS.
No, no, I'm just...
That's the tax bracket.
That is, yes.
That's the tax bracket trigger between 12 and... whatever.
22, well, 12 and 22 now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's different for next year, but yes, it's...
And it's only capital gain that falls within that 78,750 that isn't taxed?
Yes.
And any capital gains on top of that is taxed?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And if you have income, that shifts your capital gains up so it becomes exposed to the cap gains tax faster.
So in my example, yes. the 50, well, I say mm-hmm. 56,000. He mm-hmm. made 80, but he has a 24,000 exemption.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That 56 fills up some of that 78.
Yes.
Right, and it pushes it up. Yes, so it yep. sits underneath of the capital gain amounts.
And the cap gain sits on top of
yep.
it like a layer cake.
Yep.
Stacks on there.
And
yep.
it gets above that 78,750 faster, gets mm-hmm. above
right.
it by 56,000.
Right. Exactly.
And everything above that 78,750 is subject to cap gains taxes.
Yeah. Yep. So a lot of people don't understand that the more income that you have still affects those. It pulls more and more right. of capital gain into taxation depending right. on circumstances.
Yep.
Okay. So I had it wrong. I misunderstood Junior. I thought the cap gains filled your bracket and your income sat on top of that, subjecting your income to a higher income tax rate. But you're describing it the other way around. The income
the
sits
base layer
first.
Is the income.
Is the income. And then
okay,
the,
so yes. I had the
that's
layering
what keeps
wrong.
Your income at the rates they advertise in the brackets.
Yeah.
And then the triggering event is the stacking on top with the capital gains.
Gotcha. Okay, so hopefully it's starting mm-hmm. to make sense to me now, listeners. Hopefully it's making sense to you. But all
we can call it the tax layer cake.
Yeah.
All seriousness aside, this kind of ties into what we were talking
no,
about.
All
no,
seriousness aside?
We're not
aside.
Setting serious aside. We're setting all jokes aside, and now we're getting serious.
No.
Or maybe he was
now
setting all
joke?
Seriousness aside.
No, we're not joking. All seriousness aside.
No, that's backwards. It's all jokes aside. Then you talk about the serious topic.
Joe, who's right here?
It's the twisting of the metaphor again, or the twisting
I
of
I plead
the
fifth.
Oh, yeah.
She doesn't even
she doesn't
know.
Want to jeopardize a raise you just gave her
I
for
know. I can't.
Liking the Patriots.
So it's not all seriousness aside?
No.
Well, it's it depends. Were you going to make a joke?
No.
Okay, then it's all
jokes.
Serious. Then all
yeah,
jokes aside.
If you're
going
to be a serious, you're setting the jokes to the side.
Right.
And now you're serious. That's the typical use.
I can't even remember what the hell I was going to say.
I don't
me
know.
Neither.
This
but
part
it was important.
It was serious?
It was yes, all it was. Seriousness aside.
Oh, I know what the hell
yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
It ties yeah. in now, all yeah. jokes aside.
Bingo.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
It ties into what we were talking about last week. Part of, we were talking...
Investment fees? No,
yeah,
that was the EDU
fees.
Show.
No, that was the EDU yeah. show. What I'm getting at is during that discussion, I mentioned how I hire the appropriate professionals in this office because
oh,
we
yeah.
don't know everything.
Because not everybody can
right.
know
and
everything about
everything. That's why
everybody.
I have a mm-hmm. tax expert. That's mm-hmm. why I have investment experts. That's why I have financial planning experts here. Mm-hmm. So anyways, I am starting to finally understand this because I've had a hard time wrapping my mind around the stacking that Junior was always... What are you looking at?
No, that was good. Wrapping your mind around something. You said it perfectly.
I never screwed that one up.
Wow. It's hard to predict which ones you're going to screw up and which ones you're not. I was trying to give you kudos for...
He was complimenting you.
Yeah. I was giving you a positive facial expression to...
So every time I get a metaphor right, we're going to interrupt the show?
No, I'm just smiling. You're the one who stops abruptly and then says something about it.
Because all of a sudden, this big grin is on your face.
He was so happy
yeah,
for you.
I was.
But I'm glad you're happy. And again, I don't know what the hell I was going with that
know.
One either.
You
hire people that
right,
can help
hire
out.
Hire people who
yes.
can help us out.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Well, that was a very good question. I learned something on that. Oh, wait mm-hmm. a minute. Do we answer it for him, though? Is there any other way? I think we got carried away with this cap gain thing. Is there any way to make it zero? Besides my idea of lowering income, which isn't going to truly...
Have no other income. Have no other income
right.
and
so
recognize
you have a
the
lot
gain.
Of that 78.
So you have a lot of that 78. Mm-hmm. Yep.
That'd be the only way. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's not the end of the world. He'll pay some 15% on
a
some,
bit of
yeah,
it. Yeah,
some of it, not all of, you yeah. know.
So it's just timing is everything. If they can yeah. time it after some, that's why I was asking if he was still working.
I don't know.
Because if the income stops and you have some period, some tax planning window,
right.
here's another area that you can plan for taxes.
Or,
uh-oh.
He lives in Idaho. Wasn't that a community property state?
Mm.
Was it?
I think so.
I only counted to 9. I didn't know
go
we were
going to.
Go
back to your list.
It's, yeah, it was.
Okay, well.
Well, there you go.
One of you two could die.
Oh, wait a minute. Let's not go that direction.
He wants a strategy.
Death is the strategy.
This is getting morose.
If one of them were to die and they both owned that account.
Mm-hmm. There's the step up.
Because it's a community property mm-hmm. state and it was held as community property. It would get a 100% step up in basis, and then the surviving spouse could sell it tax-free and pay
and
off,
pay
the,
off
mortgage.
The mortgage.
Death is the answer.
So morbid.
On that note, we have to be done.
These are the things you get, the depth of analysis here.
Or the death of analysis.
Okay, so anyways, hopefully that helped him out a little. It helped me a little, and... do we have time for another question or not? No?
No. You talked your whole hour up. Talking. Okay. You got all excited about those cap gains. It just went on and on and on.
Well, hopefully people found that interesting. I found it interesting.
I found it interesting.
Because a lot of people misunderstand it the way you mm-hmm. described. Oh, I'm in a 15%. Well, now it's 12%. I'm in a 12% tax bracket. I have zero cap gains. And then they run out and realize an $80,000 profit mm-hmm. on something and find mm-hmm. out, oh, it didn't quite work that way.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All righty. Anything else you want to add, Joe?
I don't think so.
Perfect. It was a pleasure having you on.
Thank you.
I'll find some more old tax questions from 2 years ago.
How about
ago.
Some fresh new ones?
We've got plenty, but I'm trying to get through these old ones.
Okay.
And that the one with the step up in basis was fairly new, the woman who had that mm-hmm. question, Georgette. But next week we'll answer all new questions. We won't go to the old pile.
Okay.
Perfect.
You going to be here for those?
I hope so.
Excellent.
She'll be downstairs.
I enjoy having a third person on, you know, although you don't ever stand up and take a side when it's critical.
No. Sorry. Maybe next week I'll be
a little more seriousness aside.
A little more snarky next mm-hmm. week.
Okay. Well, we do want to remind everybody we are living, breathing, practicing financial planners and enrolled agents as well,
mm-hmm.
right, here in Northern Colorado. So if you are interested in how we can maybe help you out in your retirement planning, because that is our niche, we try to address as many things as possible in the retirement area. And that retirement area is a big, kind of a big subcategory of financial planning. But we try to assemble a team that can handle all the intricacies of all the major elements of retirement planning. And if you'd like to find out what we can do for you, we encourage you to reach out to us on the website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, HELPS.com. On there, there's a contact form. You can contact us and sign up for what we call a coffee and a second opinion, where we will chat with you free of charge to kind of describe a little bit more about our process and what we provide and see if there's some way we can be of service to you. And you can go, like again, what I said, jimhelps.com. Or you can call us, 970-530-0556. That's always out there as well. Most people choose the internet route, but if you want to work out that old rotary dial telephone, it still works, 970-530-0556. I wonder when those are going to stop working.
Rotary phones?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
They still work.
Of course they would work. They just plugs right into the phone.
Well, I know that, but...
I don't think it would work on that new... VoIP phone system we have that sucks wind because it's from Comcast.
Yeah,
Comcast.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway.
I'm going to keep throwing them under the bus on this podcast.
I know.
Until they get internet that
actually
works.
Well, you realize we need them to work for the podcast to go out. So.
I'm surprised mm-hmm. it has never dropped randomly like it does all the time while we're doing the podcast.
It has once. One time it did. Yeah.
Okay.
Luckily, we record it locally, so it didn't disturb the recording, but it cut off our live broadcast. So.
Okay.
But just once. Okay, well, thanks everybody. We'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.